Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and it's a pleasure with David Livingston to welcome Rutgers University Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering Professor Chaim Ben-Arroya, the author of three books, Building Habitats on the Moon, Turning Dust to Gold, and Lunar Settlements, that imagine the future of lunar settlements. We know that China and Russia have announced their plans. Okay, fine, you have plans, but what's it going to look like? What does it look like when people are living there? Professor, I turn to you. What is the first piece of building this colony look like? The transportation of the equipment and the people. What do you imagine? Can you describe it to us now?
Yes, John. The way I see it is that when we finally send people to the moon, we're going to be sending prefabricated pressure vessel-like structures that we'll place into orbit and then we'll land at the selected site on the lunar surface. So those pressure vessels will look a lot like the ISS pressure vessels, basically circular cylindrical structures. They'll be able to withstand internal pressurization so that the astronauts inside can live without using their spacesuits. And then those pressure vessels, once landed on the surface, would have to be covered with a regolith. So while the regolith is deadly, it's also extremely valuable. It's valuable as a shielding material. Eventually, it'll be valuable as a resource for different kinds of elements. And the size of these pressure vessels will be rather small. So maybe we'll have three or four astronauts in a volume the size of maybe an average living room. And those astronauts will have to, will have to live together, will have to deal with each other. There'll be psychological issues as well as physiological issues. So that would probably be the first settlement. And perhaps the next one will be just another pressure vessel that's attached to that one. It may be 5 to 6, 7 years before we can actually go beyond those kinds of structures. The next kind of habitat would most likely be an inflatable structure or a hybrid where part of it is rigid and part of it is inflated to give volume. So it's very important to have that volume so that people can work within a larger space. They can do experiments, they can build things. And so it might take 10, 15 years before we have a facility that maybe resembles like an average house, providing large spaces, both providing safety as well as psychological comfort. And that might be where we are in 15 years. And that I believe is really the sequence of events that we'll have to go through. And I believe that the Russians and the Chinese will have to go through.
So we're living sublunar. That's what you're imagining then, is underneath the regolith, because that's the only shielding you can possibly count on.
That's right. We can't carry any other kind of shielding that we manufacture on Earth because of the mass. But the regolith is an excellent shielding agent. It will shield against temperature variations, against the radiation, against most micrometeorites. And it's going to be what we're living under. And then we'll have to figure out how to make it seem that we're not living, underground with no windows, because there won't be any windows. Maybe we'll use flat panel technologies. Maybe we'll have very special kinds of glass that we can look through like we have on the space station. But it'll be a cave-like environment for a considerable period of time.
David?
Have you seen any of their lunar structural engineering? Is it radically different from things that you've designed or that you know about? Is their engineering different? Do they have different methods, different ideas? What can you say about how they might conceive of things differently than, say, you or some of your peers in the United States?
I've seen a number of images from the old Soviet Union as well as from Roscosmos. And structural engineering is structural engineering. And so their structures are going to be shell-like structures, cylindrical kinds of structures, because those are the strongest ones. So there might be hemispheres, there might be spherical. Curved structural shapes are the strongest, and that's why the pressure vessel is a very strong structure and likely the first lunar base. So looking at their images, you really wouldn't know whether they're Russian, they're Chinese, they're American. There's just certain technologies that are involved, and with their structural engineers' design, they're going to deal with the same environmental issues that we're dealing with. So I expect that these things would look very similar to each other. They're probably going to use the regolith like we are, and I don't expect any difference, really.
The moon colony, is it necessary to build the moon colony to get ready for a Mars colony? Does that help, Professor?
Yes. In my belief that it's critical to have a lunar habitat first before we go to Mars. There are so many issues that we still have to deal with, understanding human physiology, understanding the behavior of materials in that environment, knowing how to engineer systems and structures that are reliable over very long periods of time, developing robotics that can actually operate on the moon. All those things will help us increase the probability of survival of sending people from the moon to Mars eventually. And in my opinion, it might take about 10 years as a minimum on the moon before we can safely send people to Mars with a lot of the technology that we'll actually develop and build on the moon.
So the moon, we can regard it as a necessary step. We can't bypass it and hope to be successful on Mars. It's too far away. Is that it?
That's my opinion. A year trip to Mars with people and structures and rockets, the probability of survival is very much lower than it would be going to the moon.
David, less than a minute. Go ahead.
Do you see competition with the Chinese and Russia on this as critical? Is it something that would keep you up at night, or how do you view this?
Well, it worries me from the point of view that both those countries are really totalitarian countries that make decisions and then act on them. There's no deliberative process. There's no real politics that could stop what they want to do like it can on Earth. Here, we have a new administration every 4 or 8 years, and all the NASA targets, the plans get shifted. We lose time. Expenses go up. So my concern is on that level. It's not that we can't do what they can do. We can do much more, I think. But the politics and the general consensus that maybe space isn't that important to us among many people, that's what worries me. It worries me that maybe people in Congress will say, well, we should spend money on this. Why should we spend money in space? So that's my biggest concern, not the technology or our ability to succeed in space.
Professor Chaim Ben-Aroy of Rutgers University Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering. David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. This is Hotel Mars Episode N. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.